imagine the value that you're adding to the firm. And when you're adding that value to the firm, as you know, fewer people driving more revenue, more happy customers, imagine what we can do for our families together.
Welcome to the AI Advantage, where modern leaders decode the future of tech. I'm Solomon Williams, founder of Solenox. So here, it's no noise, no hype every week. Sometimes it's just me, and sometimes it's the brightest minds in tech, breaking down what it really takes to grow smarter with AI and automation. Let's dive in.
Welcome to AI Advantage. I'm your host, Solomon Williams. I have with us Chuck Ingram. He's the CEO of Congruent X. Chuck, thanks so much for coming on. You know, I just wanted to get, understanding of it. Just what is Congruent X? I know I learned a little bit of it for your CRMs. You're helping with customers with CRMs. Can you dive a little bit into it for our audience?
Yeah, of course. We're focused on helping companies accelerate revenue with AI and CRM. I've been in CRM since they started using the term. And a lot of times people are not happy with the results they get from CRM. And that was the impetus behind creating Congruent X. And as AI has taken off, we've really, really leaned into it and tried to be an example of a frontier firm and help people get CRM to do the job that they hired it for, which is to increase revenue.
So with Congruent X, with that, Chuck, what inspired you to kind of go through on that? Did you always feel like you wanted to build a firm and so forth? Did it come along the way through your career? I'm curious on that.
No, I actually always worked at other companies before this. My dad was an entrepreneur, so maybe it was like there was a little something in there. And what they say that most entrepreneurs have something that they, kind of were torqued up about. And mine was really, and my partner's was, we were in CRM kind of from the early days, and it's some tech that people buy to help them get closer to their customers, to get more customers, and to keep those customers. And it wasn't doing the job that people hired it for over the years. It was probably a tiny industry when I got into it. Now it's like a $80 billion industry, and only about 50% of the time people are happy with it. And that's not a great ratio. So if I'm, and this is what I do, this is my chosen profession. So if I'm a doctor, I don't want the person limping out of the surgery 50% of the time. If I'm a lawyer, I don't want to lose half of my cases, or the Uber driver in the, you bump into the guardrail. Well, we had a wreck, but nobody was injured. So success. No, that wasn't okay with us. Yeah. So we set about having a firm that we didn't just finish projects, but we had clients who got tangible outcomes out of what we've done together. And it's worked out great. This is our sixth year, and AI came up along the way. Funny enough, our first website said, we help companies get CRM right with low code AI in a new way. And 6 years ago. So maybe it was a little bit luck. We were, we didn't know that it was going to become the thing it is, but we had a feeling. So yeah. So we built a playbook-based conversation intelligence engine, and we had a unicorn approach us to buy it, and we said, no, let's stay the course with Microsoft, and it's worked out great. I think we truly are. Like, if you type in getcrmright.com, that's us. So it's actually becoming a thing, and I think more and more we're going to see companies who are focused on helping companies get the outcome that the client wanted versus just turning on the tech. I think AI is just going to accelerate that. So,
yeah, it's interesting, Chuck, because even with it, I'm always curious. I love always asking, because I didn't even see myself as an entrepreneur. I just, I And I never even thought it kind of came right. about. But I'm curious on it, as you kind of transition, you're seeing this 50%, like you're saying, like, this is insane on, and I want to provide more value. Did you, when you started Congruent X and you, over time through these 6 years, you know, did you like, was the, did you already know, like from your previous experience, the leadership style that you wanted to go about? Like, how did you go forward and say, this is what I want to provide? I'm seeing a gap here with this 50%. I want to be different. How did you apply that in, you know, on your leadership style? I'm curious.
Yeah, well, I'm blessed to have three amazing partners. And there's a book that a lady named Doris Kearns Goodwin wrote about Abraham Lincoln. And she said that his cabinet were all totally different than him. And we're like best friends, but all totally different. And I think that embracing that like diversity of thought and opinion and so forth makes things better for all of us. But it's kind of rooted in servant leadership and, you know, rolling the dice a little bit. You know, some of this stuff, and you probably felt the same way in your entrepreneurial journey, is some things you just can't do in a big company. And it's not that they're bad people or they just can't take the risk to do it. They've got a board that says you got to hit these numbers and you got to do it this way. And the way that they do it in a big consulting company is like a what they call a labor pyramid, where you have senior people, middle people, and new people, or maybe offshore people. And there's a different way to do that that you just couldn't do at a big company. And I've learned, you know, even though I've done this later in life, that the worst day doing this is kind of better than the best day of working at someone else's company, because you own it. Like, you, if you screwed up, you own it. If something did well, you own it. And I also like just love seeing the team grow. Like, they have babies, they buy houses, they, you know, try stuff and it works or it doesn't work. And I think that's something each of our partners just relish seeing people, you know, overcome things and grow as people and business people.
Yeah, no, you know, and I think it's just because of, you know, you going through on the servant leadership, and just, I think I still, even today's time, even, you know, these types of podcasts and coming forward of, you know, now people really, of course you want to put forward your branding, but I think now people really want to see on leadership, see like of these companies, large or small, they want to know like who the leaders are, how are they implementing these values? How are they moving forward? You know, and I think that taps into, you know, that human connection and so forth else, because of everything coming forward. I'm sure if you've seen AI, and now everything's becoming so digitalized, and the avatars, you know, of all this user generated content, you really want, and I think that's why you see YouTube content creators like flourishing, because people want to feel like you're part of that. Do you think that's the case with the business, and you think even with clients, you try to put that forward?
Yeah, you know, I totally follow you. I think people want to feel like they're heard too. Is like, I worked at Microsoft, and you know, I met a couple of the, you know, key C Ballmer and stuff, and like, you know, they didn't know who I was, but the only billionaire that like knew my name was a guy named Roger Milliken, and I worked at Milliken and Company, incredibly well-run company. And he used to say this thing, he'd draw a triangle and he said, okay, I'm up here because my dad started the company in the, whatever it was, 1800s. He said, but the best ideas come from here. And he would point at the bottom of the triangle. And I thought, that's maybe not the labor triangle, but that triangle makes a lot of sense. Like, the best ideas do come from the people who are talking to clients every day. So I always listen. He said something else I liked a lot. He said, steal shamelessly and give credit. So I gave credit for him to him for that observation instead of myself.
That's an interesting, I mean, it makes complete sense because, and I think that goes back to, as you said, with even with your partners, bringing in people that are diversified, you know, that are different parts, because yes. Now, you know, that brings in not only that, but your team as well, the employees, because it gives you fresh perspectives and it changes your thought process on ways that you haven't had.
Yeah, I agree. We have it in our, it's on the back of our coffee mugs, even, you know, we believe in servant leadership and diversity of thought and innovation and, you know, those things, especially now with AI, you can do things. So we've got some things we want to do as a firm that we couldn't have put forward a few years ago. And we're almost blessed that we're not bigger than we are because we can do that. So one of the things that we are going to do maybe we'll goof up, but I feel like we're going to do it is we're going to grow about 4 times the size we are, but only hire about 1x the people to okay. get to that goal. And the people say, well, AI is going to cut job. Well, it's not cutting anybody. It actually, the conversation we're having with our team is, imagine the value that you're adding to the firm. And when you're adding that value to the firm as, you know, fewer people driving more revenue, more happy customers, imagine what we can do for our families together. So we're not looking at it as less people. We're looking at it as these people that we have are going to be awfully special and they're going to be incredibly taken care of. And, you know, I believe they'll be incredibly fulfilled with the work they're doing, you know, less kind of put the square in the hole and more
triangle,
you know, right. thinking and doing the things that they're really good at.
And I think it's to your point too, it is where, you know, I think that's sometimes the scary of the hype of saying that it's going to take away jobs. And I'm of the same camp of it's here to empower. And I really wanted to have it to where it can empower the employees to take away the mundane or the repetitive, and then empowers them to be able to think about how can I make my role more efficient? How can my role better help the company? And it, as you said, it really puts everyone together in that family to raise the bar, you know.
100%. I think there's a whole lot of, you know, maybe people aren't trying to do it to scare people, or maybe they're trying to do it to get clicks. And there's a study out there that says, MIT put it out, and 95% of AI projects fail. And I do think, you know, probably half are not doing fantastic, but that's just my opinion. But 95% are not failing. Like, that study has, little do people know, if you actually read the study, they only physically talked to like 52 people, I think. Mm-hmm. And they written surveys from like 150. That is the smallest sample size I've ever heard of from any survey. And I was listening to a podcast and the host pointed out these other studies that had thousands of respondents where it was not 95%. It wasn't, you know, it's not fantastic. I don't know if you right. can hear that. It's not fantastic, but it's doable. And I want to tell you my opinion of why it's not fantastic.
Yeah, tell us. I'm curious.
It's because people are focused on using AI for efficiency-based things and not effectiveness-based things.
Expound upon that with me.
So imagine you're a corporation and the board says, AI, if we don't do this right, it could be existential for us. Like, it could be a threat or it could be an opportunity. So CEO, you need to go do AI. CEO calls the CIO and the CIO goes, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, I'm all over this. We're going to, and then they call their typical vendors, and you know, maybe they call Microsoft, and the Microsoft use cases that are typically put forward are like summarizing a spreadsheet and summarizing an email, and like, okay, that that doesn't feel exponential or existential either. That feels like it's, we're not focusing on the right things. So funny enough, Microsoft's got an amazing platform for AI. It's just the use cases that most of the people in our channel put forward are not exciting use cases. They're summarizing spreadsheets and stuff like that. And we went out, I haven't said this in public a whole lot, but we've actually gone to 4 days we work with clients, and one day we build stuff. We're building our platform. It's ours. You know, it's something that we are building, and there, part of that platform is use cases that drive revenue, customer satisfaction, whatever it is for clients. There are none that summarize spreadsheets or anything like that.
I'm curious now, like, if you building the platform, was it just you speaking with other clients and saw that this is what you need to provide, or was it from the Microsoft side, like saying, well, you know, summarizing, that's great, but it's not really filling the need? What inspired you and your team to say, we should build this platform out, and this is what we should provide our clients?
It was that exact thing. It was, man, these use cases are fine. That's it. They're fine. But then you see there's some AI native companies that are thinking about different things. And again, give credit where credit due is like, we're really big followers of Winning by Design. And Jocko and Dave Boyce and that team, a few of us have taken the revenue architecture classes and things like that. So we thought, wow, could we use AI to help a client streamline their revenue engine? And that was quite inspirational. So, and sometimes clients, you know, there's situations where I've heard where people have gone to a CFO and said, yeah, we're going to save salespeople an hour a day. And CFO goes, yeah, they're just going to go play golf. why don't we have use cases that say we're going to help them sell more stuff?
Right. And I guess that's the part where you need to kind of adjust the outcomes of like just saving an hour. Just going to get off of work earlier rather than am I actually moving the needle?
Yeah.
You know, in lighting. So as it goes through, I'm sure that you guys are going to do great with this new platform and so forth. So with AI coming forward, you're seeing these trends of making it more, you know, accessible and much more efficient. How is that like adjust to Congruent X's approach? Because I always hear when I did my due diligence on the 30 days to outcomes, as you were saying, you know, eliminating that enterprise and keeping it down to where it's more quickly. So, you know, my question is kind of gathering my thoughts is, you know, how has Congruent X's approach to the 30 days to outcomes changed, you think, on how CIOs and, you know, CROs think about like CRM adoption and as you're kind of, especially now with AI, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the professional services world has trained us to think in terms of big projects because, you know, at first it took a long time to do things. You know, like 20 years ago, it took a long time to do things. And people wanted to do these big digital transformations and a big ERP project and a big Siebel CRM project. And that was great for a professional services firm like us. And, you know, because you could have a big project and a team and you could count on everybody being busy. And it was kind of good for the people who sell software because they could sell more seats all in one glob. And it was good for the people who bought the software on the client side because they could claim victories. Oh, I bought a lot of licenses and I got a discount. And really who it wasn't that great for was the people who in the company who use the software. because you give them too much stuff at one time, that change of absorbing all of these features was just too much. And like literally, if you took a cell phone 20 years ago and went back in time and walked into a conference room, the way that you do a project would be the same, but then you show them a cell phone and they go, oh, that's amazing. I've got the whole world at my fingertips. But the project would be the exact same as before, as 20 years ago. And we just decided, we think that people want faster time to value. So maybe you do smaller things that are more impactful, and let's have victory and then do the next thing. So our 30-day idea, which works across AI, it works with CRM, is it really has to do with data. And we want to take, because really, like, why do people buy a CRM? You're hiring it for a job. If it doesn't lift revenue, just use a piece of paper. It's for the data. And we want to take the friction out of collecting data, harmonize that data, improve that data, and then deliver it back to people in a way that makes their life better. And that usually in the context of them doing something. So I'm about to say something that's blasphemous. 360 degree is generally speaking stupid. That's what we talk about in CRM. I want a 360 degree view of the customer. Sometimes it's okay, but generally you don't want, I don't need to see, like, if I'm going to take my dog for a walk, which he's been quite vocal in our podcast, my watch just says, hey, it looks like you're going for a walk. Do you want to track it? I don't need a big form. I don't need a 360-degree view of my neighborhood. I don't need to know that my neighbor Larry has kids. I need to know at the moment I'm doing the thing I'm doing. And we call that jobs to be done. It flies kind of in the face of 360-degree view of the customer. I don't need to know everything about the customer. I need to know just the thing about the customer to do the job that I'm doing. If it's preparing for a meeting, I don't need to know everything. I just need to know what I need to know to accomplish what I was going to do before the meeting. What are the questions the customer might ask me? That's a prompt Satya Nadella asks before his meetings, and you know, the like that kind of thing. So what is the job the person's trying to do? And if you think about it, a salesperson usually like does six things, eight things, maybe that we plan our week. We prepare for calls. We go have calls. We follow up on calls. We do our forecast. We plan the deals we're working on. And instead of thinking I need a big form that's 8 feet long to do that, maybe I just need to be thinking of those six or eight things and help that person get what they need for those six or eight things. In our 30 days, the first week, just figure out what those six things are and what is the data needed and how do we take all the digital friction, kind of a buzzword, sorry. How do we take all the digital friction out of collecting data and giving data back to people? And digital friction just means the extra work that tech makes people do.
Right.
We want to take away all the digital friction. And we, at the end of that first week, let's say we've got five ideas to take the friction out and help people be more effective. We just pick one. We build that one. The other ones go into backlog, and we go focus all of our energy on that one for a month. And usually, like, we've got one example where a client, two other companies came in and built them the 7-foot long form. And these folks go and call on distributors. Like, they call on, I don't want to say too much about what they do, but They're in their car. Imagine a person in a car about to make a sales call. They don't want a form that's 7 feet long to look at with a 360-degree view. So the way we did it was, It's location aware. You pull up in the driveway of your client and it says, hey, looks like you're at ABC company. Here's the latest and greatest from ABC. Here's what's on the truck. Here's what's, you know, here's some things they might ask you about. Here's what's in stock. Here are the specials. And this client went from the average person using CRM from pretty much zero to the average person uses it 60 times a day.
You know, and I think that's brought up a really good point, because even just from my past experience, you know, with CRMs now, you know, you have Salesforce, you have Dynamics 365. And so, do you think that that's the biggest hurdle now, or the trend, the biggest barrier that ConcurrentX is trying to resolve is giving, you know, these systems that provide so much, you know, features and data, but it's not giving you the right pieces to get involved. It's like it's the same thing of you adding in, it goes back to our previous notion of, is it actually moving the needle? Is it really actual info that I really need for the next call that's going to provide me? As you said, giving 7 foot. So do you see that? Do you think that's like the biggest barrier?
I think it is. I think people, like, whether it's Dynamics, HubSpot, Salesforce, whatever, I don't think people want to do CRM. If people that are listening to this, I'm making air quotes with my fingers. They don't want to do CRM. They just want to do their stuff. They want to go talk to my client, Solomon. I want to go follow up on what Solomon and I talked about. I don't want to do CRM. I just want to do my stuff. And we think, you know, we work a lot with Microsoft. We think that they have an incredible platform for that kind of thing. But sometimes it's not really the platform so much as it's the approach of moving away from that 20-year-old way of building 360-degree view, 7-foot-long forms over data, and move into 2025, where at home, if I want to do something, if I want to know what the weather is, I just say, Alexa, what's the weather? I don't need a 360-degree view of the weather in my region. It just says it's raining outside. It's 85 or whatever. And I think that's that kind of experience we're having at home is coming to work, to the extent that these models of delivery, like companies like ours do, are willing to be flexible. Because they're built to do big projects. They're built to big buildings, not little houses. And we're blessed enough that we're small enough that we saw this coming, and we build little houses really fast that tie together to do big things. I'm thinking of that because of the construction that's going on in our.
Good call. So with the, you know, this is, you know, with ConcurrentX, you know, I'm curious just on to see like how it is now. Like, are there like, what's been really working well with ConcurrentX now, you know, with your clients so far? Has it just been implementing, you know, obviously that model that you have, or have you implemented new parts? What really has it been working well for in 2025?
What's worked is when two things, when clients are willing to kind of think a little different. You know, if you went shopping for a widget, or you went shopping for a big project, and somebody says, you might not be happy with that. Maybe we should do something smaller that makes a faster impact. When folks are willing to think about that and consider it, it works really great. Where it doesn't work so great is when folks aren't as willing to consider that, and we probably not the best fit for those folks when, you know, our focus on users. We have built an agentic onboarding solution, which helps us do more of the bigger CRM stuff and make it feel like a smaller engagement, which helps us with those teams that need to replace a whole system. Like, you can't just do a small thing. And that has gone amazing. We're working with a big insurance company right now, and they've told us we do as much. And obviously, they've worked with other people in the past, yeah. And they tell us our team does as much in a day as the, you know, these global companies were doing in 2 weeks. And I do believe our team is smart, but, you know, we use a lot of AI that, you know, we baked in a lot of things that we do into AI. It actually does more, but it actually thinks about things that folks might not think about. And we engage the client not just in workshops, but we engage the client through digital surveys and through we record every single interaction and we aggregate that. And we think about a survey in a little different. What if the survey has a point of view based on research, based on things the client has said, and says, is this right? How would you change this? And then when you come together for the workshop, it's way different. It's not, tell me about your business. It's like, hey, in our digital communications, we talked about this. You're just talking about the delta at that point.
Right, right. And you're able to get, it seems like from the forms, you're really able to tap into much deeper, more substance rather than the shallow parts of kind of getting in. Would you say that's correct? Yeah.
So what works great, to summarize, is for us is when people are willing to consider something new and they're not just saying, I want to buy some consultants by the hour and, you know, your price is X per hour. And it's not that. Like, we have amazing people, but you're not just getting by the hour people. You're getting our team plus all of our methodology and our smarts and everything rolled up in AI with the people. So you can't, like, it just doesn't work. So it kind of messes up some of the purchasing client purchasing stuff. But if you can get past that, you get more value.
So with it, for if you could, would that be the main thing, Chuck, into if you could really help CROs and with other companies just solve one challenge today, would that be the case, or would it be something a little bit different?
For CROs specifically, you know, that was a little bit in our world. For a CRO specifically, a CRO has 18 months. Like, that's, and I heard something where it's gotten shorter. And a CRO has 18 months. Their average tenure is 18 months. That's like worse than a college football coach. And so you think about, if you're a new CRO, you've got 18 months to go affect change and drive revenue that's performant, predictable, and you have insights inside of the revenue engine. And most places, they don't even know what's going on. Like, there's this whole thing going on where sales is the dark arts, and, you know, nothing's, yeah, you can't, oh, you can't apply analytics to that and so forth. And if you're the new CRO, you don't know what people, you can't call every rep and every day and find out. Like, you have to be able to coach at scale. So if we do what we said we were doing earlier, if we could take the friction out of collecting data and get it into a system and give insights to that CRO can coach people. They can implement their playbooks to drive revenue, performance, predictability, and insight. So what I mean by that is performance is, like, I used to play golf every once in a while. And, like, if I went today, I might hit it really, you know, I might hit one shot good or I might hit it bad. But if I hit it good, I wouldn't know why. It would be completely unpredictable. Like, I could hit it in the woods one hole and the next would go perfect. And so it's unpredictable. But I might have performance. But insights is like knowing why. Why did I hook it in the woods, or why did I hit it? You know, most of us go get a beer if we hit it really far or we have a great month. We need to know why. And kind of taking it back to this CRO, it's, they have 18 months to figure this out. And usually they don't start out with good data. So if I were a CRO, like, aside from meeting the team, one of the first things I would do is go get my arms around data. And that way you can affect change in the organization before your 18 months comes around and they're going, well, you know, Solomon, what, why haven't you fixed the sales issues that we have? So I think we're servant leaders. We want to serve that CRO and that CIO whose internal customer is the CRO and help them have tech help them to drive revenue that's performant, predictable, and has insights to it, and to help them, you know, keep customers longer, retention across that. We use a bow tie metaphor from, you know, all the way across the revenue engine.
Yeah. You know, Chuck, I was on that, you know, I'm glad that you kind of broke that down for those, you know, from the CR. I think that puts for those that may not know, peering into the world of this high level stakes of, you know, coming on as a CRO or a CIO, how to make change and how to scale, you're having to taking all this data. So I'm glad, I appreciate you kind of breaking that down for us. But, you know, as Congruent X goes forward, you know, as kind of wrapping up, like, what do you feel like in your vision of Congruent X, let's say in the next, you know, by the next 6 months or this time next year, would you want to, is there something that you want to provide as you're building out this platform that you're having? Is your goal that you see Congruent X to provide those leaderships, those folks with that right, that lean, that straightforward data, or is it just to take on more projects? I'm curious to see what your vision of Congruent X is.
That's a great question. We want to help our clients implement a revenue engine. And when I say that, like, think about a revenue factory. Like, for, I used to work at Milliken, so, you know, that we, I knew a little bit about this. And if you've read the, like, the book, The Goal, or this theory of constraints and things like that, people know already, there's already a science for optimizing a process. It's just like, think about, there's, so if you have a factory and any systems throughput is only equal to its greatest constraint. So a factory, when I worked at Milliken, you know, they made carpet and all kinds of stuff. If there's one machine in the middle of the floor that's spitting oil and is slow, it can't, the factory can only go as fast as the slowest machine. And the people in manufacturing figured this out a while ago. So all we have to do is take that thought process and apply it to the revenue engine, or the revenue factory, as Jocko van der Kuij says, Winning by Design. And we can actually help our customers drive revenue performance, predictability, and insights. It's, you just, like, and we use it with three levers: volume, velocity, and conversion. So if you divide that engine up across a revenue engine, just think of each one of those as a machine in the factory. You know, how many things went from one machine to the next? How many things, how long did they stay there? And like, you can just, it's predictable. And there's even an approach for attacking this stuff. You attack the key constraint. So we go after the place in the factory where the machine that's spitting oil. Which could be marketing. It could be the SDR team is not getting conversions. It could be the sales team is not selling to the committee very well. It could be, but if you diagnose this, just like it's a factory, you could, so that's what we want to do. We don't want to just go turn on software for clients. We want to help them have a revenue engine that they can tweak and bend and put a turbocharger on that can help their companies grow. And that's what we want. That's really what we want to do.
So with that, you know, on that, Chuck, on, so as it's scaling through on the next year, if you had a magic wand to kind of have it to where AI as now it's kind of moving forward, it's building, it's going at a rapid pace. But if ChatGPT 10 was here, and if you had a magic wand on it, you can implement anything, what would you have either in your day-to-day life or just in this process of what you're speaking on, helping Congruent X help with the diagnosis and bring it forward to remove any bottlenecks? What would it be, your thought?
So I'm going to give you my favorite prompt.
Okay.
And it'll lead to what you just said. My favorite thing with AI is to use it as a thought partner. There's a book, I can't remember the guy's name, but I think it's called AI Leader, AI something leader. But he basically said, you tell the AI, let's unpack the prompt. You are an expert at blank. I need to blank, and help me come up with ask me three questions one at a time about blank so you can help me do the thing I'm trying to do. I use that like 10 times a day for stuff. AI is a thought, you know, yeah, I get it to do all kinds of other stuff, but that thought partner thing
very much
so. Is awesome. And that kind of leads to my humble answer to what you, I'm sure, you know, Microsoft and OpenAI and Google are thinking of cool stuff, but I wanted to see what I see. And, you know, the glasses but apparently OpenAI is building a gizmo that, you know, I don't know if it'll be in your pocket or what, but if it sees what you see, you don't have to tell it anything. You don't have to be a prompting expert. You don't have, you know, first it's prompt engineering, then context engineering, then I think typing is going to become less of a thing. I want it to see what I can see, and then it'll know what you want, and it can kind of be your even more of a thought partner or a helper in our lives and a co-pilot in our lives. And I think that would really move the ball forward.
And to your point on the prompts, I use a similarity, but I add in a caveat whenever it gives me output. I always think of, you know, what am I missing, or what are the, you know, I don't want it to always be a yes. And I try to be like, what am I not missing, or what are the cons to this? So now it, because sometimes, you know, ChatGPT always like, oh, great idea, great, you know,
fascinating. It's agreeable.
So to your point, you're absolutely right. You know, I think that there's been so many times I've used it just in the business and just for my day-to-day on helping me to think outside. Like, gives me new avenues that I never even thought of. And now I can break down, as you said, being that thought partner, being that co-pilot to help me really brainstorm and how to elevate. So that's a great answer, Chuck. Like, so, you know, this has been great to have in the conversation. I appreciate you taking time, you know, Chuck, this, you know, really speaking on just on, you know, really bringing forward on the CRM space, you know, and that's why I was so interested in bringing you on. And now even with your breakdown of these high level people and just in businesses, having to have the right data moving forward and the correct, not all the fluff and everything that goes on, but really lean, what's going to help me move the needle forward or help me scale. So, you know, for those that are kind of listening in that is tuned in with us for the whole time, you know, where can they like learn more about Congruenx if they feel that this is a platform that they want to, or a partner that they're going to go forward, or just to follow your story, where can they learn more?
Yeah, of course. So I'm on LinkedIn. You can ping me on LinkedIn, Chuck Ingram. Our website, congruenx.com. We also have some landing pages, getcrmright.com. getairight.com, getcopilotright.com. So we're out there.
Perfect. Well, Chuck, again, thanks for coming on. For those that have tuned in for the time, thanks so much for tuning in to this episode. We'll catch you guys next time. So hope everyone take care.
Thanks, Solomon.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. If this episode sparked an idea, share it with your network. Subscribe for more no fluff conversations on how smart tech drives real outcomes. And if you're ready to future-proof your business, let's connect at solonox.net.